ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe that you are a hater. It is that time of week where we get our interview on. And with us, we have, she is the host of Take It There with Taylor Rooks. Check that on the BR app. She got all the big names doing interviews, all that. Your guest booking gang strong.
It's been a very good season. Yes, I really like the give me 5 stars, you're a hater, because that's so true.
Oh, man, you know, this is just what it is.
You gonna go out of your way to knock a star?
Well, I'm always curious about the person who is, like, so dedicated to podcast reviews that they're really like, okay, so here are the things. Like, I get that on TripAdvisor, like, yeah, when you're talking about hotels and you itemize the whole thing, and then you're like, yeah, but the sheets are scratchy, right?
Right.
Like, I get that. People on the podcast, like, you only give us 4? Come on, dog. Exactly.
You give 4 and then you leave a comment. It's just a lot. I didn't know that there's these podcast reviewers, but there certainly are. But it's the same people that, like, leave a YouTube comment.
Yeah. Well, I also feel like they're the people giving the Uber driver a 4.
Yeah.
And because I feel like with the Uber driver, it's basically 5s and 1s, baby.
Exactly.
5s and 1s.
Like, what did he do that knocked him from 5 to 4?
Right. But what is
and
that?
It's like smooth ride, nice talker, but didn't have gum. 4.
Yes.
Like, you know, like, what is it? So I don't get it.
I tell you this about Uber too. I am finding, I don't know if you've noticed this, the level of city to city variance in the cleanness of the cars.
True.
Atlanta, it's a real hit or miss proposition on what kind of car you were jumping into.
And you're like, what did they just get done doing in Atlanta? Like, it could be a real hot situation.
Yes, yes, yes. But Atlanta, I find that they're much more friendly Uber drivers. It just, the car might be a Newport commercial.
That's hilarious.
Like, I got one. I was like, yo, man, like, this is like affecting my lungs, homie. Like,
but I have found, and I'm not somebody who likes to talk a lot in the Uber. I want to just get from point A to point B. But if you talk to me, obviously I will speak back. Best conversation has been in Atlanta. Like, Atlanta Uber drivers usually have good conversation. I think the same with New York, too.
Now, here's my question on this one, because I don't get that many people trying to talk to me in the Uber. I imagine you have a lot more people trying to talk to you.
Everyone tries to talk to
me
in the Uber.
That's what I was about to say. Are they trying to talk to you because they know who you are, or are they trying to talk to you because they're trying?
Maybe 10% of them will be like, oh, I watch your show, or I follow you on Instagram. It's really 90% just want to know about my day or how I'm doing, and you going home to your husband.
Oh, yeah. You know, I told you they tried.
You know what? People don't realize it's really weird and something really invasive. You shouldn't let someone get in the Uber and then say, oh, you headed home? Because then you're trying to see where I live.
Yes.
But Uber drivers always do that, and I don't think they realize what they're asking when they say, are we going home?
Right.
Because you don't want to be, so now the person knows where you live, but they always ask it.
You know what? That's, I think that there's a dynamic at play there, because you're right, is that, at least I know for myself personally, I guess in the last 2-3 years or so as the discussion has changed, that I got a different understanding of, like, the imminent threat of men to women. And so if I were an Uber driver at a different point in my life, that would be a question that I'd ask, just because it's, like, common conversation, right? Like, I don't know if you saw when Mina Kimes did the thing talking about, yo, if you're in an elevator with a woman,
press your
floor before that, and get out first if you're getting out on the same floor. Like, all of that makes perfect sense, but it's stuff I wouldn't have necessarily, like, thought about prior to that, because I'd actually had a dilemma about what to do getting out the elevator at the same time, because I'm Southern. No, after you.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. Except after you is
after you means, well, now I see where you're going.
Right.
And that's true. I think, especially with things like the going home, men don't really understand why we're having to think twice about everything, but you really do have to think twice. And it's little things. Sometimes you feel like if you're out and a guy says, can I have your number? You should be able to just say, no, thank you.
Right.
But you always have to have an explanation.
Yeah.
Like, no, I have a boyfriend. No, and damn, well, I ain't got a boyfriend. But I got to tell you that.
Right.
Who knows what you're gonna do? Like, you just feel like you can't say no. You have to make the guy feel comfortable with the fact that you're not gonna give your number.
Yes.
You know? But men don't really have to think about stuff like that.
No, I will say this though, like with the Uber driver and stuff like that. Nah, them dudes, I think that we know, like, if you are my girlfriend and you tell me that this dude is asking you if you're going home, then immediately we're like, wait a minute, you cannot tell him that. He's trying to figure out what the location of your domicile. So it ain't completely, like, we don't know, right? Like, we get it once it's put into, like, a slightly different context.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh man, but I imagine the Uber drivers, this is just the thing they say, hey, you on your way home? And the answer is no, 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 I'm on the way to CVS.
Yes.
Because hell, I don't even put my house as my Uber destination when I go home.
Oh, you do a cross street or something?
Yeah, or I'll go, like, I'll give them the one that's across the street, mm-hmm. or I'll just walk up the block or whatever it is. Like, me and Pablo got into an Uber before we went to the Super Bowl. We were riding to JFK. And
ew, why did you leave out of JFK?
No, it was LaGuardia. That one was LaGuardia. So we were leaving out of LaGuardia, and we sit in the car, and while we're in it, you know, I got no indication of anything. That dude sent on his Twitter. I read it. I was just like, let me see what happens here. And I searched for Bomani. Bomani Jones just got in my car. You know, and this is not normally a concern for me in New York City, because most of the drivers, I'm not positive they watch that much English language television. You know, so I was thinking about Miami. Uber driver never knew who I was. Mm-hmm. They weren't watching our channel.
Yeah.
That just wasn't what it was.
Yeah.
But nah, man, that's an omnipresent thing that you gotta not let people know what you're doing and up to.
All the time. And so imagine if he said, just drop Bomani Jones off at LaGuardia.
Yes.
Now everybody knows you're leaving. Okay, so you're not at your home.
Yes.
I mean, I'm kind of taking a step further, but it is true. Like, now you're not at home. What if someone wants to rob you? Like,
yes.
I'm always thinking about getting robbed as being in from Georgia. I'm like, uh-oh, now you know I'm not there and you can get in.
The home invasion game, strong,
seriously,
boy.
Seriously, it really is. So I wish people were a little more cognizant of different things like that, but I think we're all getting better.
Well, you got me thinking about the Atlanta home invasion thing, because because my parents' house around there, man, they was playing a home invasion game, something furious around there.
Really?
We had Rich Homie Quad on Highly Questionable, and he was talking about how they used to pull those kick doors, and I was kind of listening, and I was like, yo, that sounds real close to home. Like, that whoa, I got real worried about my parents. I'm like, hey, man, so how's it going?
You know what? Now, granted, let me just say, before y'all come for me, I'm from the suburbs.
You're from Gwinnett.
Yes, I'm from Gwinnett. I'm not from the city of Atlanta. 20 minutes out. Don't play me. But the thing about down there, it's not even the robbers. It's like the scammers. Like, people are just always trying to finesse a situation.
Yes.
You know, so you just want to say the least amount of information at all times. So just beware of that when you go to Georgia.
Oh, wow. See, I lived in Miami, and that's where the scammer game is whole next level. Because at least there's ways for you to make some money in Atlanta in a legal fashion. Miami got a lot of ways for you to spend your money. It does not have a lot of ways for you to make no money.
You know, I've never been to Miami.
I'd never been there until I moved there.
You told me that.
Yeah, I'd never been there until I moved there. I had one trip that I went down right before I moved there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a month later, that was the first time I'd been to Miami. And then I get there and I'm like, oh, I am in another country.
Yeah.
This is, you're going to see. Like,
I'm excited.
It's a different world.
Yeah, shout out NEBJ.
I'll
be there this year.
Oh, yes. Capital we. Italicized
we. I'm in there.
Us. We on the way, baby. All right, we'll be back with more with Taylor Rooks. But first, are your credit card bills keeping you up at night? Interest rate in the double digits? Whew, that's high. Be smart and pay off your credit card balances with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a fixed rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay. You can save thousands in interest. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, LightStream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Bomani for more information. So the show,
I forgot about
this. Yeah, no, man, we got time. So the first season is wrapping up.
It is season finale with DeMar DeRozan, and he was fantastic. I actually think he's the best episode. Just everything
really?
He touched on. Yeah, he was incredibly open about everything that happened with the Raptors, incredibly open about mental health, gave some great Popovich stories. He told me something that has to do with music that I'm not allowed to say, because he said, this is an exclusive and I can't believe I'm telling you this. And so I'm not going to say. Everyone has to watch the episode.
Oh, no. Hold on. We can tease it a little bit.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Research, you know, yeah. After the interview.
I understand you. So did you enjoy doing the show?
I really did. Naturally, you're a little hesitant. We're like, I have this show that's going to be just mine. There's all this money behind it and people are believing in it so much. It has to be good. So there's some fear that's associated with it, but it's really been mostly joy. I've enjoyed every single episode. I feel like the viewers are liking it. They're walking away knowing something about the guest, which was my real goal. So it's been good. Like, a lot of people ask me, like, have you seen any of the ads for the show?
Oh, yeah.
When you're watching the games? Okay, I love them. I get excited every time I see them. But I did a podcast the other day, and they were just like, okay, so they're putting a lot of money behind you. There's a lot of pressure with that, a lot of pressure for it to work. And I agree, like, there's a lot of pressure from Bleacher and Turner and everybody else, but there's no more pressure than the pressure I'm putting on myself. Like, nobody wants this show to succeed more than I do. And I'm really happy with how it went for the first season. We've had good guests, good conversation, and I'm just looking forward to the next.
I tell you, I look forward to having more conversations with you about my theory about why there should be no pressure on you. Never forget this. This is for everybody out here listening. This is the dead up truth. It is your job to do the best you can. It's their job for it to do well. Right? I ain't asked you to do this. You the one that asked me to show up here. Okay, cool. I'm gonna interview some people. Oh, okay. You couldn't figure out how to make this work? Wow, that's a damn shame. Right? You know, but I know that, especially with something, I think this is probably the biggest undertaking that you've had.
100%.
Up to this point.
Yeah, by far. And I try to explain to people, I mean, like, I just turned 27, right? And I think my life has had to move a lot quicker than most people, and I've had to make decisions a lot quicker than most people would have had to make them. Like, I decided really early that this is what my life was going to be like, and everything has reflected that. So, and I don't mean to be dramatic, but if me within the sports media space, like, doesn't work, I don't really know what I would do. This is all that I've done and all that I know, and it's the decision that I made. So I do agree that it is on other people to make it work. You're right. Your job is to excel at the thing you're supposed to excel at, 100%. But in a lot of ways, this has become my life. Like, I have sacrificed a lot of things to do this. In some ways, I've sacrificed a relationship to be able to do this. Like, you miss out on a lot because you decide to enter into this space. And I think sometimes, I don't want to say you lose parts of you, but you just have to dedicate so many parts of you to something on the outside. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And I think you've had a grind that I think for a lot of people where you don't know who somebody is until they pop up, right?
Yeah.
Until they come. And I think for a lot of people, it's the Big Ten Network. You were working there and then the SNY to here. But you were doing like recruiting stuff for Scout before that, right?
Yeah.
Like, and that is the grunt work grind of all grunt work
100%.
Grinds.
100%. Like, I was really almost working the champagne beat since I was 19 years old. The 4 years I was in college, I really was like a beat reporter. I covered Illinois football, Illinois basketball, and Illinois recruiting. So I was doing that for 4 years. So when I started working at the Big Ten Network, it almost seemed like the Big Ten Network was my second job, not my first. And I think that's one of the things that allowed me to be able to work there. I had a really strong reel. I had broke news before. I knew how to have a conversation, how to interview, how to be on camera. So this has like been a while. I'm obviously very young in the game still. And there's so many things I want to get better at. But I think for some people, they look at me like, where'd she come from? Like, why is she here?
Right.
But like, I'm here because I've been doing this a long time.
Right.
Like, I have been working very hard at this for a really, really long time. I think that shows in the work that I do, but just for people, it's really hard to get to the work I do because you're just like so focused on other things.
Right.
But yeah, it's definitely a struggle, but I'm kind of at a point where I don't care as much as I did. I used to care a lot. I just don't know.
We'll care about the way you're perceived, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I used to feel like to be successful, everyone else had to feel you were successful.
Right.
But that's not the case. Just like I used to think that when you did the job, you had to act like a journalist and act like a reporter. I realized that I started doing well in the space when I just acted like me.
Right.
There's just things that you have to learn, and I had to learn them very quickly.
Right. Now, one thing that you mentioned, Champagne, or forget the thing that you and I have in common. Both of our parents met at Illinois.
I don't think you ever told me that.
Yeah, my parents met in Champagne many, many moons ago.
Did they go to University of Illinois?
Yep. They both went to graduate school.
You never told me that.
Yeah, my parents.
You never told me that.
They met in graduate school in Champaign.
That's amazing.
That is where. And that is, I was like, that is where your parents met.
It is. What year?
My parents are old. But, so I think we're talking like 1963, 1964. Okay. Yeah, we're at a different point there.
Okay.
Yeah, and your dad was a ball player, right?
Yeah, he was a running back from 83 to 86.
And didn't they go to the Rose Bowl or something like that?
Went to Rose Bowl.
How much?
Got that ass whooped, but they went to the Rose Bowl.
Now, how much have you heard about that team going to the Rose Bowl?
I've heard quite a lot. It's funny, though. So apparently, obviously, they wouldn't blame the loss on anything. But Hugh Hefner went to Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go.
So when they went there for the Rose Bowl, like the night before the game, they went to the Playboy Mansion.
Whose idea was that?
Thank you. And so that's, hold on, but quote unquote, the game, why they lost.
In the night before the game, New Year's Eve?
Yes. Yeah. It was, I'm like 95% was the night before the game. If it was the night before, it was the night before the night before. But I remember it being the night before. So Hugh was like, come on, Playboy Mansion. I've seen these college kids are hyped to go to Playboy Mansion, and they lost. But it wasn't because they went to Playboy Mansion.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie, though. Me in that situation, it's the Rose Bowl. I don't care about it. Like, we got to the game. We got to the Rose Bowl. I'm gonna tell people we went to the Rose Bowl. I'm gonna tell people we went to the Playboy Mansion, and nobody's gonna ask the score.
Exactly. Because you want to know what was the Playboy Mansion like.
Yeah.
And that's all you care about.
No. Especially like at 20-something.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's... Hugh should have known better, though. Hugh apparently must have thought they was going to lose, too.
Exactly. She's like, just enjoy it.
Yeah. He was like, come on, fellas. Y'all ain't about to win this.
I think it's so cool that Hugh Hefner went to Illinois. I don't know why. We don't have that many good alumni.
Let me think. Who's at the top of the list for you guys?
Not counting athletes.
Yes.
Hugh Hefner. I'm a huge Law & Order fan, and Jerry Orbach went there.
Really? Okay. That's a winner.
That's really the only two I can think of.
Yeah, see, my alma mater.
It's not that good.
My alma mater is...
Are you counting North Carolina?
No. My alma mater is Clark Atlanta University.
Okay.
Like, that is... I went to grad school at Carolina. That's a business relationship.
Still good, but you have good alumni.
Yeah. Carolina goes strong, but CAU, I'm trying to think, because, like, we get you, like, some Black History type stuff. I'm bad at, like, rattling these things off the top of my head. Our people who didn't graduate is, like, a great list. Right? Like, cats who just stopped by for a little while... That list is monstrous. Like, that list is dope.
The passerby list, that's the good one.
Yeah. Like the in the music industry list.
Yeah.
Oz is bottom. Like Brian Michael Cox, Don Cannon, mm-hmm. Bobby Valentino. He was in school when I was there.
Bobby Valentino? That's fire.
Bobby Valentino was in school when I was there. And I've told this story many times that he and his brother did a duet of Lately at a fashion show once, but they did the Jodeci version of Lately. But the thing is, Bobby's brother wasn't singing. He was just playing piano, so Bobby had to throw it to himself. Like, a Bobby sang
no
it.
No way. It. I know that was fire. Bobby. You know what a funny Jodeci thing? So I love Jodeci.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my sister were listening to a song. It was a Drake song. I can't remember. And he samples Jodeci. And my sister is like, I love this part. Like, I love that he did this. And I'm like, you know, like, that's not him. Like, he took that from someone. And I realize how many young people.
That's your little sister, right?
My little sister. Don't realize that a lot of his stuff is taken. Like, she didn't even realize that, in Legend, when he samples Genuine, that's not his song. I think you're not a fan of that. I don't think most people know. She was shocked when I was like, you know, this song, sample. She thought this is the genius of him.
Your generation needs better representatives.
That is not my generation.
Y'all deserve
what generation do you count me in?
I mean, so you're 27, right?
Yes.
This doesn't put you in the millennial space. Like, I feel like Drake had his stuff coming out when you was in high school. Like, he yours.
Yeah, I was in high school when it came out. But that makes me a millennial?
I think you're in that zone. Like, I'm barely out of millennial zone. I'm 1980. I come in comfortably with these old heads. I'm over here with the grumps.
Yeah, I thought, like, Best I Ever Had was the greatest song ever when it came out. Do you remember when that came out?
I do remember when that came out.
Admit it was good when it came out.
It was. Just, you know, that weirdo video that he and Kanye did that was, like, a foreshadowing of a lot to come.
Yeah.
with both of those gentlemen.
Oh my God, Kanye, I can't even go down that road. I could do a 3-hour thing on Kanye.
We might get back to that.
Yeah, we
might get back to that. But I wanted to ask you, I saw you say something about your show, and I thought this was an interesting thing that you said, because you did the first interview was with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah.
And you talked about you going to a therapist and you were talking to him, and you said that it was important for you to be open with people if you were going to ask them to be open with you.
Yeah.
Like, did you have to get comfortable with trying to get people to that space? Because I know myself personally, I'm bad at asking questions because I don't really like getting in people's business, right?
Yeah.
Like, but you seem good in that space.
No, I love it. I think if you ask any of my friends, they always say that when we talk, they feel like I'm interviewing them. Like, I just always want to ask questions, you know, why you think that, and I want to understand and give my thoughts. To me, discussion really is just this nice mutual relationship that both people can get something from. And when it comes to interviewing, I feel like if you approach it the same way that you would talk to your friend, you're going to get the best stuff. And I don't believe in asking anybody a question that I wouldn't also answer. And that's why it was important for me to say that I go to therapy, because then he felt like, okay, she gets it. I can say it too. I think if I didn't tell him I tried therapy, he would have said he never tried it. He's like, I went to it. It didn't work. Because he felt like she understands we're in this space. She's not going to judge me for saying it. It's also a thing with certain buzzwords. Like, people hear therapy and you're like, like, you feel like you can't go there.
Right.
But when I say it first and I normalize the word, you're like, okay, we're going to talk about therapy and it's fine. And that comes a lot of, like, the way that you phrase questions. Like, when I wanted to talk to DeMar DeRozan about the Raptors, I made sure to at first frame it about the Spurs, because you're going to immediately be turned off if I come right about the Raptors. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I just think there really, really is an art and art to asking questions, and a lot of power and vulnerability, but mostly when the vulnerability is coming from you. And one thing I think I've had on my side when I do these interviews is people think that I'm not going to judge them. I also think, I always say this, being Black helps me interview. Because you just naturally, inherently see someone that looks like you and feel more comfortable. And a lot of times I'm interviewing Black athletes. I think it also helps that I'm younger. They don't see me as somebody that is like judging them or views myself like more wise than them. I'm just their peer. And all of these little things really play into having the best possible interview. Also the environment that you're in. That's why it was important for me that we travel to the interview. So we're in spaces that were familiar to them, that felt like they were at home. When you go into a studio, you just naturally think you're getting interviewed. I don't do interview with mics, because when you're holding a mic, you think you're getting interviewed. When you have it right here, and also when you can't see it, you kind of forget. So it's just little things like that that I've tried to make just really important when I do the interviews, because it gives you the best stuff.
Was there anyone you did this season that you like that really stood out to you as like, no, this is really good stuff?
I really feel like people are going to think that about DeMar. I'm excited for that one to come out. I think Damian's interview was really good.
Lillard, right?
Yeah, Damian Lillard's interview was good.
He still live with his mama?
Not anymore.
Okay.
Not anymore. Not anymore. He got a kid now. You can't do it once you got a kid.
We did an interview with him very early in his career, and I tried to halfway joke with him about living with his mama. He didn't really have much of a sense of humor about that. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, man, you don't want to live with your mama. Like once you made the call to live with your mama, you getting jokes, dog. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care if she live on the other side of the house or
That's
not.
That's hilarious. You still a mama.
Nah, he went, and it's sad. I ain't talked to him since. So, like, I'm like, yo, my bad. I ain't really.
When he sees you, like, you the one talking about my
mama. I ain't mean to offend him. But I said, I was like, but my question was like, yo, so, you know, your mama live at the house. What you do when, you know?
That was your question.
Yeah, more or less. Like, I phrased it differently, but it was just like, yo, you know, like she respect the game, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I don't, you know, just have anybody to my house. And I was like, oh, come on.
He took it so serious.
I'm like, come on, dog.
Yeah.
Because that's why my mama couldn't live with me. I don't care how sick she get.
Dang.
But no.
I hear him being like, well, I hear that's
yeah,
really
I was
funny.
Like, damn, my bad, dog. But
he was a good interview. I also liked Saquon's episode. And I think I like that episode because for most people, the only thing you've ever heard him talk about is football. Because he's a rookie. You just hear him before the game and after the game. He had never done an extensive sit down interview. And that one was really, really strong to me. And also because he talked about other things like how he's too nice and he needs to be more selfish and he feels like he has to be humble and he wants to please everyone. He's getting better at that. But he thinks one day he'll be the best running back ever. Like, we just touched on a lot of stuff, and it was a really good peek into what he's actually like. Yeah. So I was proud of that one, too. But DeMar, I think, is the best.
So when did you realize you wanted to do, like, the sports stuff? Like, just generally, when did you realize you wanted to do this?
I would say I decided sports was the thing I was going to do senior year of high school. And then realized I could definitely do it my freshman year of college. I had always said what I want to do is interview people. Like, when I was in high school, our class president, her name is Salam, she did the speech, you know, at graduation. And she goes, and Taylor Rooks will be the next Barbara Walters. It's really cute. Because just everyone growing up knew that what I wanted to do was talk to people and, like, get to know them. I'm just a people person. Like, I believe in being good to people, being nice to people, and understanding what people are actually like, and understanding that life is hard for everyone. It's good too, but life is also hard for people, and that's something that I think about as well. But so I always knew I wanted to discuss the stuff that makes life what it is with everyone, whoever it was. And then I decided that sports was the best outlet to do that, just because you never see that with an athlete. It's always about what they do first and not who they are. So when I was in college, I started this blog, and I would just interview the football players, the basketball players, coaches, managers of the teams. It was just whoever I could to get better at interviewing. And I said, this is the path I want to go down. Like, I want to bring these stories to the forefront of the games that we all like to watch.
And you've always been good with the idea of being on camera.
Like, I was the annoying kid who would make my mom bring out her camcorder and just record me eating at the table.
Oh, wow.
Sitting on the couch.
Are you serious?
There's so many, like, home videos of me doing nothing. Granted, my parents fed into it. So, like, I don't know. I don't know whose fault that is that I was that way. But, no, I love the camera. I don't get shy at all when it comes to camera. Family reunions, I'd get up and sing and dance. Like, I was that kid. Asked my parents a million questions. Yeah.
That was one of those times where you ask a question knowing the answer, but you still got to ask it anyway. Yeah. Right? Like, that is absolutely.
Really? You thought that I liked being in front of the camera, Bonnie?
I went to your event for the premiere of the show, and you told us to all take pictures because that outfit, to take it to the ODB place. You got this new outfit that costed a lot of money.
And I need evidence.
And you wanted all the photographs to be taken. So I just had to guess.
It was a fire outfit, though. Like, come on.
It was dope.
It was fire.
It was dope. Like it was a hunch that I had that maybe you and the camera had already had, like, a good thing that's going on.
We're good friends.
That's it. I should have started with, like, you. I should have started when I was 5 years old. Like, yeah. I only do well with cameras in the sense that I act like they're not there. Right? And not that the camera's overwhelming for me necessarily, but I just have to act like, y'all just watching me. Okay, cool.
Were you, and I swear, I tell everybody this if they mention you. To me, you are, like, one of the smartest people on TV. I genuinely feel that way. But, and not to say you can't be really smart and do sports, but was sports the thing you always wanted to do, or did you want to enter into a different space at first?
No, I wound up here. I really wound up here. You know, like, I went to graduate school at North Carolina, studied for a PhD in economics, and both me and the program were like, nah, dog, this ain't going to work. They just said it first. And so I left after that, and I met Ralph Wiley once, and Ralph Wiley put me down with ESPN.com, and then, like, that was the beginning. I did not think at all that I would wind up in doing this, but the thing, I figured out a couple of things. One, I really liked it. Like, all this stuff is stuff that I would, like, the level of, like, consumption of content and stuff is probably stuff that I would have been doing anyway. So I really liked it, and I figured out, like, how to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I figured out how to do it in a space that worked for me. And then once I was there, there's a million different things that we can do, a million different things that you can talk about, right? So, like, for me, it stays interesting in that way, kind of in the way that I imagine for you it stays interesting, because there's always new people to meet, right?
Yes, absolutely.
New people to talk to.
Mm-hmm. And that is one thing, though. I was like, okay, who's going to be on the next season? Because I feel like we interviewed everyone, even though you didn't really. But booking is a task.
Yes.
So you're like, all right, I feel like we booked really good people. How are we going to get this caliber, like, this roster another time? But that's also a lot of the fun in it. There is always somebody new. Someone else is getting drafted. You know, somebody had some scandal come out you want to talk about. It's always new.
I think you'll be okay.
I hope so.
I saw the people that you was getting on the damn SNY show.
Yeah.
I lived here 2 years. I don't know what channel SNY is. Something tells me that you'll be able to get them cast to come on the show.
I think we'll be good. It's really, really worked out. And luckily, everyone that's come on has had a good experience with the show. So when I have another guest, I say, hey, will you ask like your teammate if he would come on? And now there's just this network for the show. Right. And we have that element in the show where we have an athlete like send a video to show the person we're interviewing. Like we had Antonio Brown send the video for Jimmy Butler. We had Odell send one for Mo Salah, CJ McCollum for Ja Morant. So now it's just like a thing. Like people are knowing about the show. Even if they aren't the guest, they're in it because they sent this video. So, and that's a big thing. Like social media also has probably played the biggest role in my career. Like if I am being completely honest, like, social media is a big, big, big reason why I was even able to have this show. And I understand that, and I don't really see any shame in that. But it is also why athletes want to come on the show. It's why people watch the show and want to retweet and all that stuff. So a lot of factors have played into why I've been able to do this right now, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Do you still enjoy social media?
Enjoy, yes. But I just, like, it serves its purpose. I understand that you're going to get the best of people on social media and the worst. And anybody who says that they've never cared about social media is lying. I mean, they just are. In the beginning, it was something that would bother me. When I was at the Big Ten Network and maybe the beginning of SNY, but once I started doing the podcast, I stopped caring. Like, you know, at Big Ten Network, I would tweet search my name, like see what people were saying. Or I'd read every comment. I'd read every single tweet. And if it was bad, I'd be thinking about it. And then at the Big Ten Network, if I saw a tweet that was critiquing something about me, the next day, I would fix it. You know, because I was like, okay, they don't like that. I need to not do that. But you'll never be happy if you care about what people on social media say. And I know that now. And now it's like, there's bad comments about me all the time. There's on the internet about me that's not true all the time. And you just don't care because you learn that you can't.
You're willing to give people like some of your life. Like I have taken all of that back myself. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give y'all nothing at all.
Why did you take it back?
I took it back. Well, I had a couple of things that made me feel, and the people around me, a little unsafe. And so it was kind of like, okay, sometimes people don't need to know I'm out of town. They don't need to know, you know, whatever that thing is. But then it just kind of got to a point where I was really asking myself, like, do I care if these people know what I did last night? Right. Do I care if these people know where I went on vacation? Like when I was building a brand, I thought it was important to give people an understanding of who I was. And now I'm kind of like you in a lot of ways. Now that I'm kind of less like them in some ways, and that it's just, I don't feel like I used to feel like I was talking to friends. Because, you know, when you do it small, you got a small intimate group. And that's what you feel. I was like, nah, I ain't talking to friends no more, man. I'm talking to strangers. Strangers getting nada.
Yeah. Strangers are also mean.
Yeah. See, the mean part I can handle.
Yeah.
The mean part, just because I am one of those people, everybody says it. I don't mean this defiantly or defensively. I really don't care what people think. Like, I don't care what the good things that people have to say. Like, I'm just kind of like separated from that. So like, I can handle the mean things. You can call me all this, whatever. I'm like, wow, this is funny. Cause you're not even, it's not about me as a person. It's about me as an avatar on a screen that you direct whatever is inside you at that thing. Okay, cool. I get that. That's what I'm going to be. But nah, man, it got a little dicey. I think I knew this is when I really stopped. I went to Costa Rica on a vacation and I posted a picture that had no geotag on it, and it was just a picture at my hotel, like off a cliff.
Are you staying at the
boom? And the guy was like, yeah, I just stayed there last month. And I was like, no.
Done.
Mas. No mas.
No mas.
No mas. I'm out.
You know one thing I always think about sometimes when things have bothered me or things have happened, I'll always reach out to you like, what should I do? How should I feel and stuff? But something you tweeted once always sticks with me because it's so true. You said that there's always going to be people that don't rock with you, but there's so many that do.
Yeah.
And you just can't let the bad be louder than the good. And that's so true.
Yeah.
Like, I think as humans, you see one bad comment and ignore the 30,000 good ones because there was one bad one. But you just can't think like that because it really isn't the loudest voice. It's just the one you hear.
And I got, like, I realized I got all kinds of people that I don't like for no good reason. Right? Like, they've done nothing to me. I don't know who these people are. Ain't no good reason for me to dislike them. Right? And it happens sometimes, right? Sometimes you're going to be in the business end of it. And the more, like, the more visible you get, the more you're just going to have people that for whatever reason have decided they don't like you. And it 100%. Can be the most arbitrary thing in the world. You can remind them of somebody and it's going to be a wrap.
One reason that doesn't bother me now is I am so at peace with who I am as a person. Like, if someone doesn't like me, I can guarantee it won't because I was mean to them.
Right.
I was never nasty to them. I never said anything bad about them because I believe in being nice to everyone. So if you're going to not like me, then that's going to be on you. If you want to be mean or write something nasty, cool, that's on you because I'm at peace with how I am and also how I treat others. And if you want to say something, that doesn't say anything about me, it just says something about you. But like I said, it took time to get to that space. I'd say I've probably not cared for maybe 2 years.
No, welcome to the party.
Yeah. But I don't know if I don't care as much as you, okay? I'm not there yet. Give me a couple of years. Give me some time.
Oh, yeah. No, but I'm saying you're getting here. So I'll ask you this because I know when I met you, I was aware of who you were, but the world is now more aware of who you are than then. Like, have you had a moment where it kind of tripped over to you to like, oh, okay, now things are a little different?
Yeah, like I would say, if I leave the house, 8 times out of 10, somebody like comes up to me.
Really? That's a high ratio.
Yeah. Like someone will say, hi, I watch your stuff or like want to take a photo, like something like that. And it wasn't like that in the beginning. But that started when I got to New York, especially if I go to a sporting event. Then there's a lot of people that like want to come up. But yeah, I would say that's when I realized maybe like people kind of know me. But it's still weird to me. I think even if you ask, like, my friend Chelsea back there, like, she'll be like, you can go in there. Like, they're going to let you in there. I'm like, I don't think so. Like, I don't think we should go in. And then we get up there and they're like, oh, Taylor, you can come in. Like, it's just still weird to me. There's a lot of things because we're all the exact same person. Like, it's weird to me that you would treat somebody better or worse because you, like, follow them on Instagram or you watch their show, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, since that's how I see people, I think that's how everyone sees people, but it's just not.
I will say this, though. That thing you talk about trying to get in somewhere, you got a little bit of a tiebreaker working for you that I don't have, but I am always, like, in a position where it's like, okay, there's a chance that this dude will let me into whatever it is if he knows who I am.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't know who I am, I will not ever be the person who says, do you know who I am?
Oh,
I refuse.
For sure. So, no. Yeah,
so my game is to kind of lurk around and be like, hey, man, did the line start down there? And I feel
and
like
then,
I feel like I can tell everything from that right there. They'd be like, oh, okay, cool.
That's a good trick.
Yeah, this happened when I was in L.A., a friend of mine of some level of visibility was having a party during All-Star, but he had like a corner or something like that. And he's like, yo, come out. I say, cool. But he's not like a party type. He just told me he was going to be at the spot. So I say, straight. So I get to the door and the dude at the door is like, yo, what's going on? I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to get in. He's like, yo, it was a private party. I'm like, oh, dag. Okay, my bad. I didn't know that's what was going on. And so I just waited outside to start like sending the text or whatever. Somebody inside hit the security dude. Like, the security dude came back and said, yo, who'd you say you were coming to see? And I gave him the name.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, yeah, you cool. You can get in. And what apparently happened was somebody in the spot looked at security like, hey, man.
Let Bomani in. You know who that is?
Yeah, you're not going to let Bomani in? Damn, dog, that's messed up. Right? And so I was just like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I'll take it. But if I had gone up to that dude like, hey, man.
Yeah.
You're supposed to let me in. No dice.
You watching High Noon?
Yes. Like I say, I have no tiebreaker. I have nothing to offer this dude other than good intentions. All right, man. Appreciate it.
I have a question, though, just because I'm curious.
Sure.
What do you feel like your fan base is, that demographic?
So we actually did a like a social media audit of some sort. I think my agents did it. My social media stuff is overwhelmingly young white men. That is on on social media. It is overwhelmingly young white men. But if you were to ask me, like, who the base is, who the crew, Pablo sees this all the time when I'm out. Man, it's cats like driving trucks and like at work. Those sorts of dudes are the ones that easily are the most like, hey, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. Like black people,
I love that.
Yeah, like black people hold me down in a different way than like I have plenty of white people who really, really like what I do and come out and have been wildly supportive. Like I don't want to pretend as though none of those people exist. But no, it's a certain segment of black folks. And for me, at least, it means something a little different to
definitely.
Them. Like I, to them, I represent something. So it becomes being bigger than just whatever my actual performance is, you know, or how that goes. But like those are my folks. Those are the ones mm-hmm. that are just like, yo, like, you know, Cat on the Train, be like, yo, man, I watch, like, I check out everything that you do. Like, it's just like, oh, I got to see, he pulls it up on
and
the phone.
And it means something to him.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, yeah. Like, for me, that's the one, and I think that, I guess, for you, as you do this longer, and people get to know you better, like, those are the folks that you really get to be at a point where you're like, nah, man, thank you. Like, yeah. that I appreciate.
Definitely. I think, though, you do such a good job of relaying experiences that you've had, but also trying to get other people to understand why their experience is different. And that's probably why black people do appreciate the words that you say so much. Even when you do it snarky on Twitter, we're learning a lesson from it. Yeah. And I don't think everybody has that gift of like putting things in a different view for you to understand. And you do that a really good job of
well,
that.
I got another sneaky part of people that like really rock with me. And this is the part I think people don't understand, man.
White women.
I don't think so. Okay. Not so much. No, women in sports is a tricky bag because there's certainly women who are there, but it's such a small part yeah. of the sample. Although I did meet a woman on the street in Harlem who named her kid after me. That was interesting.
No.
Now, I mean, named her kid after me is probably a stretch. That's how she put it, but I think she heard a name she liked.
And yeah, like just, she was like, Bomani Joe, yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
name.
You know, and she might like me too, but no.
Still cool.
She showed me a picture of a little Bomani. Like, that was it. But nah, country white dudes, man. Like, yeah, there's some of them that don't rock with me, but I went to school.
What?
I grew up going to a school in a town with 1,500 people in Texas, like 25 miles outside of Houston. That's where I went to school. So the dirty secret of this is, a lot of these cats that people think like would hate me or that I would hate them, I got more in common with them than Will Cain does. Because I've been to their houses. I've been off those dirt roads, well, right? I've done all that stuff with
them.
That's
because most people think your biggest unifier is the color of your skin.
Yeah, no.
And that's not true.
No, I know their story. Like, I know what it is. And I also figured out, and this is where, for me, it gets fun, is a lot of the stuff that people think I'm talking about is black is really mostly country. And so they know exactly the same things that I'm saying. I can pull that stuff out and then be like, boom, all right, cool. We're here. Like, who do you think yours is?
Probably, like, black men. Black men, maybe ages 18 to 35 or something. That's kind of a big age group. But yeah, I think it's definitely black men.
Yeah.
But I don't think white men are that far behind it. But I think black men certainly the base. And a lot of that is just because, like, black Twitter. You know? But I say black men.
Yeah, but I say, no, sports, and you know, because black people also overpopulate the sports sample.
True.
Like, that's where it gets lost in this.
I will say, one little subset that means the absolute most to me is black women.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the time, black women will come up to me and, like, talk about how they have followed my career, or they love my interviews, or they, like, are able to see themselves in me, and that means the most to me. Like, I was even talking to my friend about this the other day. Like, I am a black woman who is in this space in front of a camera who is not like racially ambiguous.
Right.
I am black and I look like I'm black.
Right.
Not saying, you know, black people don't look different.
No, but you know exactly
what
you mean.
But like, I have brown skin. I have a big nose. I have high cheekbones. Like, I look like a black person. And I think for a lot of black women, they see themselves on TV, but like, not really.
Right.
You know? And some people have kind of relayed that message to me, like how much it means for them to see me. And that really means a lot to me, too.
Yeah, no, I think I have a base of black women, they're certainly within it, but it's not from the sports necessarily, because I've been doing all the other stuff for a long time. Like, not to be the old man now, I've been doing this almost 20 years now, which is a frightening thought to have, but I have been doing this now for almost 20 years. So
that,
like,
is,
you know,
crazy.
It's like the music stuff.
But also, congrats.
Yeah, thank you. I survived it.
Yeah.
Like, real talk.
Do you feel jaded?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if I don't feel jaded or that I got jaded early. Right.
So now it's just what it is.
I know what this game can do to you.
Yeah.
And it did it to me a lot when I was very young. And it did it to me repeatedly at those points, right? Like, I've been fired. This is the first job I've ever had for more than a year and a half. I've been fired from basically every job that I'd had, a place go out of business, or, you know, and they decide they don't want to bring me back or whatever it is. Like that, that's always been where it was. So I've been fully aware that this thing could be taken at a point. But what I'm also aware of is that after it can be taken, you can go get something else.
Definitely.
And so whatever happens, I'm like, cool, I'll go do something else. But I had the same point as you where you talked about it, this sports thing, where you talked about it, this didn't work, you didn't know what you would do. When ESPN let me go in 07, I was like, hey, man, I don't know what I'm going to do if I don't do this. Like, this is the call. Like, I was thought about that professor thing. All right, I can't do that anymore. I don't know what exactly is going to happen. And I cobbled some things together. And then I, you know, then from there was able to make it work. But, yeah, you can't knock me down so far that I don't think I can get up. And now, I mean, keep it real. I'm paid now. So like, you can knock me down. I mean, I will need to find something, but I can buy some time.
Yeah.
Keyword being buy.
Go ahead, flex my money.
No, but that's but honestly, that yeah. is, but that's a comfort that Definitely. I have. That is like the ultimate privilege.
No, but
privilege.
It's a comfort you've earned.
Yeah.
You know, like that is something you worked, and now you're able to say that. But do you think that you define yourself by the job?
No. Because if it's gone, it's gone. Right. I'm gonna be the same person. After this goes away, if I am no longer doing a television show, it's part of why I don't really lean in on the, hey, I'm TV guy stuff. If I'm not doing a television show anymore, I am still going to be the exact same dude. I'm mm-hmm. still going to have the same friends and they're going to see me the same. And I think, see, when I flunked out of graduate school, that was the big one for me because everybody I'd ever met in my life had just told me how smart I was, right? Like at every turn, it just been like, you know, how smart you are. Even my colleagues in graduate school, the ones that stuck around, like I don't think they were necessarily saying I was smarter than them, but there was like no dispute about how smart I was. And now all of a sudden I have done this thing and I have failed. I had never considered the possibility that there was anything that I could do brain wise that I could, that wouldn't work for whatever reason. And it was kind of like, I don't know if humbling was the right word, but it was just like, yo, man, that was kind of rough. Like, I had my brother calling me, giving me pep talks before I went to school at points because it was really? It was beat the hell out of me.
Well, you weren't used to not being the best at something.
No, I was just stunned. I just, you know, it was a lot. And then after that, I remember I called my parents after I got that letter and they were cool. And I called my brother and they were cool. And then a couple months later, I flew up to Bristol and they're like, yeah, we want you to write for us and do some stuff for us and everything else. It's just like, okay, cool. I'm gonna go do something else. But immediately the pivot had to be made. I had to go do something else. And then I've lost all these different jobs I lost. It was just like, oh, okay. The one constant in this is I am the same person that I've always been. And I don't know how y'all feel about me, but I like me. So cool. I'll make it work.
You're pretty great.
That's nice of you.
I read this quote once. And I know you're saying you don't care what people think. And I 100% believe that. I really do. There's two people I believe when they say that. But I don't know if I fully believe Russell Westbrook. But I put him up there, kind of. But this quote, it says, I'm not who I think I am. I'm not who you think I am. I'm who I think you think I am.
Yeah, I see that.
You get what I'm saying? And my question is, A, do you feel that that's how you act? And B, do you think that's how most people act? Because I think that is so true for the majority of human beings.
I think that most people, yes, to a degree, when they have decided that they know what people think they are,
they become that.
They then give it back to them.
Yes.
Right? Even if they don't become it, that's what they give them. Like, that's like I always felt like that about Mike Tyson, that it reached a point where Mike Tyson knew that we thought that he was crazy. And so he was then just going to give
us crazy.
This crazy because that's what we want. Reality actually told me this once. I'd never heard it this way. He was like, yo, you do not see yourself as others see you. I don't have a great gauge on I know what some people think about me. I know what a couple handfuls of people think about me, but I don't have a great gauge on like what people think I am. I think I got a halfway decent handle on how I'm kicking it. And that's the whole thing for me is that like there's some people who can tell me things that'll like shake me, but I think this is maybe the best way to put it. And I think you might be able to relate to this. I really don't care that much about what people think, but I do care a lot about how people feel.
Yeah.
And so if I get on the wrong side of how people feel, then I'm looking back at myself and I'm like, all right, you probably could have done this a different way, you know, but if it's just like, well, I just, you know, I disagree with this or whatever, or I just don't like you. Somebody gonna not like me. Mm-hmm. Somebody over here gonna love this though. No matter what, somebody gonna love this. Make it work. Like I have a friend. She likes ugly dudes, right? This is by her admission.
I feel that.
You know, like, you got a friend that likes ugly dudes.
Chelsea, do you feel like I like ugly dudes?
Sometimes.
See, your friends say sometimes. But there's the ones that like, they like a big old Jolly Green Giant type. You know what I mean? I don't know what it is. It takes them to a different place. And I wish these ugly dudes understood this. There's a woman out there, good looking woman out here, who is waiting for your ugly ass to show up. Like, this is what she's been waiting on. People are into all kinds of weird and random stuff, man. You just find a handful of them. And boom, that's you. That's your crew.
Now, just because, like, I'm nosy and it begs the question, what do you feel like you're into? Hey, listeners, listen up. Bomani's letting you know.
Oh, you know, like, what am I into with women?
Yes.
I will tell you this.
Will you tell me? I'm asking what you think you're into.
I'll tell you what I will tell you, though. You got to get a hold of whose name is on the marquee over here. You over here trying to take it there on the right
time.
No,
I'm not.
I'm just
curious now.
I have found through my travels, and as I look back on things, because I don't have a physical type, mm-hmm. per se. I do really like women who have a way with words.
Okay.
I like women with senses of humor. Yeah. It's a big thing. Like, women who can legitimately make me laugh,
like,
and
witty,
see and identify funny stuff. That's the biggest thing that'll go, like, that'll take care of it.
Okay.
For me. That's probably.
Listen up, y'all.
You're
out there when you meet Bomani.
Oh,
come with witty quips.
Well, yeah, but you know what time it is now, right?
What time is it?
What are you into?
I would say physically, I don't really know if I have a preference. I'm like, whatever. I'm kind of all over the board there. Although I date black men. That's just what I've dated. As far as personality, I realize through time, I just like want to be with a man who knows who he is. And that seems like a very simple thing. But most people don't know who they are.
No.
And that to me is the biggest thing. Because like, when you know who you are, you're going to treat me according to what you want to be in the world and the type of person you want people to see you as, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd say that. Obviously, things like want you to be funny and driven and like smart, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like all that's amorphous, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm bad at itemizing those kinds of things, because I feel like you get somebody and you dig them. And then after that, you try to figure out why, you know, and then something will come up that you don't like. And that may, you know, that'll affect whatever comes up. But nobody, like, that checklist ain't going to get you. But so far, and this is no matter who the humans are in your life in any way, we've all got exceptions to every rule that we like put out there in our lives.
100%. Like, my thing is, okay, this is one physical thing I almost don't budge on.
You're not here for them short
facial
dudes,
hair.
Oh, facial hair.
You must have facial hair. Like, that is my thing. I love facial hair. But yes, I do agree to your point. At the end of the day, you might meet someone who just moves you. And they may not have those things. And you're cool with it because that's who you want. And I understand that.
Yeah, no.
But, like, for me, the basis is just, like, knowing who you are. Like, just know who you are.
That's hard for everybody, though. Like, that is, I don't know if you said this, but Dave Chappelle, not the special that had everybody so mad, what he was saying about trans folks, but he was talking about like the gay dudes he went to high school with, and he was like, you came to realize that they knew who they were.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that was I found that to be a very interesting point when he said that. He was just like, yo, they knew who they were, and everybody's out here in one way or another trying to figure out who they are. And it's a fascinating gap in humanity, I've always thought. The space between who people are and who people want to be.
Definitely.
Right? Because, like, social media element of the world gives us who people want to be. Like, they are displaying to us exactly, well, for whatever reason, how it is they want to be seen. That is what they're giving us. And then after that, you kind of get into the, so who is this person? All right.
Oh, and you'll meet somebody that you have followed on social media and think you know what they're like, and they're nothing like it. I mean, nothing. Because you're curating your personality.
Right.
And that's not actually what it is. So I think social media, like I said, has helped, but I think it's going to hurt how we view human beings.
Yeah. Well, have you heard about Phil?
Phil.
Kyrie, you heard about Phil, right?
Oh, yeah, I know Phil.
This is going to be what?
Who's so some Phil? Dude is on Tinder.
Oh, yes.
Named Phil.
Posing as
yes,
you.
Yes, pretending to be.
I saw Jamila post that, right?
Yes. And I still want to know, when you show up. And you are
what
not
do you
me.
Do?
How does I haven't even been me in 10 years from some of the pictures that he put up. I'm like, so like, what is it exactly that you do? And so, yeah, I am fascinated by the idea that there are people some more explicitly and consciously than others, are selling something that they know is not them. Like, I feel like...
What's the end game?
Right, I feel like if people only follow me on social media and then they met me, they would find out that I am that same person, but just at the tone.
Yeah, my mom was like, he acts the exact same.
But I feel like, I think what happens though is that people realize the tone is more gentle than they realize it is from seeing it on the internet.
I agree.
But the words and everything else is exactly the same.
Like, I agree.
I am
that
person. We have all though met that person and been like, you know, you're a lot funnier on the phone. Like reading off the screen.
Like, okay, this is totally different conversation. Just reminded me. So say you're dating someone, right?
Mm-hmm.
How important is it to you to like move from text to phone to like FaceTime? You know what I'm saying? Because people are different texting than they are talking.
Yeah. FaceTime is a real newfangled 21st century stuff that I'm
so
just
you don't
like,
do that. Okay.
Not so much.
So then talking on the phone.
It kind of all depends.
Like, would you go on a date with someone if you hadn't talked to them on the phone yet? You'd only texted?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I would.
Yeah, I do that. You know why? Because I feel like a lot of those first meetings we have with people are so superficial anyway that it kind of don't matter. Like, it's like when people are like, yo, I worry about meeting people on the internet. Oh, yeah, because there's a real vetting process for who can get into the mall, right? Or, yeah, that bar. Yeah, they were really just making sure that this was a good dude
like
before they got
here. Like, it's actually safer probably on the internet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so
that's
like,
why, like, if my friends will, like, they'll talk about, hey, I want you to date this guy. I think you like this guy. Whatever. That's a totally different conversation. But I'm like, well, I'd rather be with someone my friends knew because I can't imagine walking into, like, a mall, meeting someone. We know none of the same people. I don't know anything about you. What if you're a murderer? Who knows? Like, there's just something really weird about meeting people and forming connections with them in random spaces. But that's how it used to be.
Yeah. See, I trust my intuition on stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, just with generally in meeting people and stuff like that, I tend to figure it out pretty quick on people. And people, for whatever reason, get pretty comfortable with me pretty fast. So I've been doing this for a long time. I know when it's some nonsense and you can just keep moving and it ain't really no big deal. Yeah. So I don't fear the unknown in that same way. Right. But, you know, everybody takes steps, right? You know, meet in the middle somewhere, you know, not tell too much information, like all those kinds of things, whatever. But no, I don't fear what somebody might be. And I guess it's also because we've all lived long enough to know somebody for years and then pop up and be like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. What was that?
100%. I agree with that.
Look at this. We have kept this thing going for about an hour. I think they're about to kick us out.
Are they?
Yeah, I think they might kick us out the
room.
You
know what? I know you said you don't necessarily like interviewing, but you're a good interviewer.
Thank you. I'm trying to, honestly, this is a thing that like I wanted to get like improve at. Like it's something I was like, I got in this business to talk. You got in to talk to people? No. I got in here to talk. Right. I came to give. I was not here for this other stuff, but I did 4 years working with Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan is
so good.
He's so good, but he's also so good in a way that I never want to be good because I'm not nosy. And Dan will get in there and try to crack into the most miserable moments of your life like that. He's pig and slop on that kind of stuff. But, you know, I figured a few things out. We had, are you familiar with Bubba Wallace?
Bubba Wallace.
NASCAR driver, the black NASCAR driver.
I'm not.
No, but we talked to him and we had a really interesting talk and I was like, oh wow, I actually know what I'm doing here. Like this guy is talking to me about opening up and some of the things in his life.
That's great.
I know the next question to ask. Oh wow, look. Hey.
Like growth.
Yeah. That was part of why I wanted to do this is I wanted to get better at interviewing. And apparently you're the best interviewer ever because you managed to interview me in the course of being interviewed. And I found myself being like, wow, I'm opening
so
up.
So much about, because you said, I don't want people to know anything about me, but now we know what he likes, ladies.
Yes, I like smart women.
I was doing you guys a favor.
I like smart women. Like that I will give. I have no problem sharing that part with the world. I like smart women.
Good.
And apparently from what I've learned, that's not something that many people like.
They don't. They care about other things.
Well, I'll ask you this. We got you because, we've left the elephant unspoken, but it's fine. Okay. Like, how hard is it for you? Or do you find it is for you in this business or otherwise to get people to like legitimately respect the fact that you're bright?
Difficult. And you know, and I really like that you asked this question, but also that you asked it as like a footnote. Like it wasn't the main part. The reason I say that is because usually when I do an interview, that's all we want to talk about. Is that I'm a woman in this space and people don't care about what I look like and what are the struggles of that. I will come on interviews and that's literally the point of it. Whereas if someone had you on a show or, you know, Stephen A. Smith, we were talking about that, they would talk to you about your job or sports. you're never asked any of the things that we as women are asked ever. So it is hard, but I've realized that the people that are supposed to know that I'm smart know that I'm smart. You're never going to convince YouTube commenters or people in the Instagram comments that are like, oh, y'all dating. You're never going to convince them that they should listen to what you're saying. I could do one of the best interviews ever and someone is going to say, damn, she kind of bad though.
Mm-hmm.
That's just women. I mean, it's maybe amplified in my space, but every single woman deals with that because you're always going to be seen as a woman first and a journalist second, or a woman first and a doctor second. Like, there's always a qualifier for us.
Right.
Even when you think about things like at a macro level, like Serena, best female athlete. You talk about women's basketball players and you call them women's basketball players because we're always defined by the fact, not even that we're women, we're defined by the fact that we're not men.
Right.
And so that is always a hump that you have to get over. But I even remember when I was doing the podcast at SNY, and so, you know, we sat on those two chairs and it was a camera. It was a simple setup because it's a podcast and we uploaded it to YouTube if you wanted to watch it. The comments about me got to be too much. And I was like, you guys, like, maybe I should sit behind a desk. Like, would that help? But then I was like, it's not my job to make y'all comfortable.
Right.
I have on a turtleneck and pants and people are going to say something like it. That's just people. And there's a lot of times nothing that you can do to like stop that.
Right.
So you just got to stop worrying about it. But it's not a thing that gets easier, and it's definitely not a thing that gets better. Like, I wish when I was dealing with this, nobody told me it gets better, because that's not true.
Right.
You just get better. But it is never going to stop. And honestly, that's the advice I'd give anybody that asks me. Like, I don't want to say that as you keep going, it'll come less and less, because it won't. If anything, it might become more and more. But everything that you want to exude and the work that you want to do is going to get better, and you'll be fine with that.
Right.
You know,
I will ask one thing tangential to that, just because it was so hilarious.
Yeah.
When did you realize that Dwayne Wade was just not going to look at you?
Everyone talks about that interview and I'm like, I feel like he was looking at me.
I
think what happened is someone like took a screen grab and they're like, but that was the best podcast.
Okay.
He was so professional. He's so great.
That's good. Cause that is the funniest though. Cause he was just.
Everyone, like, when I put up the Ja Morant episode yesterday, he tweeted, he was like, just watched Taylor Rooks' interview with Ja Morant. So impressed. He's a great dude. Can't wait to watch him in the league. And like three of the replies were the screenshot from my interview. I'm like, you know what?
Oh, that was so funny though.
I know. I feel like it was so blown up. For no reason.
It was blown up, except what you have to know, and this is a space where there are a lot of people who can relate, and this is the space that you're not in, which is married men about Dwayne Wade's age, who in such a situation like that are like, you know what? I'm going to look at the exit sign, because as soon as this is over, I'm going to get up and leave. I sure am. I'm just going to walk away.
Y'all are silly.
Oh, no, it was funny. Remember, I texted you about it when it happened because it was just so funny.
It was ridiculous. Like, I was literally trending on Twitter. I'm like, this is not. Could we be trending because we, like, he said some good It's never that, but no, I get the jokes in it.
But I do think one thing that's interesting for me as knowing you is it seems that you're a little surprised by all of this, too.
Yeah.
Like some of these reactions, which I think some people find a bit surprising.
I think so. It's just so funny because these are things that like me and Chelsea talk about all the time. Like, I'll be like, I can't believe this. And she's like, why can you not believe this? Like, things really are surprising to me still. Like, and maybe it's just because the way that I see other people, I would not think the things that they are. But yeah, like, I even remember the NBA awards last year. I posted my dress online. I just went to the awards. Blah, blah. I leave and look at my phone. I was like trending just because I put myself in the dress on Instagram. Like, just people, for whatever reason, I really don't know what it is, because I think it is really, really heavy for me specifically. Like, care a lot about what I'm putting online. I don't know if there's like any other woman in this space that it's like that much whenever I do anything. And I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's something that I'm doing. I just don't know. And I don't know if I'm used to that part yet. Why do you think it is?
It's the unspoken elephant, man.
Which is?
You said before that, and you were right, that, you know, you do these interviews and people ask you all the time, you know, about this stuff, and it gets to be annoying because they put it out on Front Street. Mm-hmm. But that is, I think, for a lot of people, very similar to if you are 7 feet tall, everybody's going to ask you if you used to play basketball, right? The difference is that if you're 7 feet tall and you used to play basketball and you say no, people are not necessarily going to keep pushing you with questions about basketball. They're going to take it that you don't play basketball anymore. With you, they are going to be far more likely to like fixate on that because that's the role that women generally play in this is like the idea is that you're eye candy or that like something aesthetically that's linked there. But if you are 7 feet tall, then people are going to notice when you walk in the mall. It's just going to be one of those things. It's like, yo, here's the 7 foot tall person again, right? If there was 1 7 foot tall person on Earth or 1 7 foot tall person in the space and that 7 foot person keeps coming everywhere, they can be like, damn, here go the 7 footer again.
I feel that. And that's a good way to put it. But you know what's really crazy though? And I'm in no way like bashing myself or downplaying myself. Like I understand that like some people think I'm attractive, but I don't think that it's like some crazy, like, oh my God, look at her. She looks so good. I just don't think about that about myself. I think what it is, like I said, it's because I just look like a black woman and people just like that. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah. Well, it is a bit rare for lack of a better term, right? Yeah, like I do think that.
Cause it's like, I feel like people are acting like I'm like some like Beyonce or something. And it's not that. I just think that they're not used to seeing what they're seeing.
That's fair.
So then they just really blow it up. Yeah, does that make sense?
It does. But remember, everybody got a Beyonce that ain't Beyonce.
She was just the
Beyonce.
Only person I could think of.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? But it's just like, hey, man. Or, you know, everybody's got their random individual preferences. And I guess the Venn diagram for you is a bit of an overlap for people who watch these games.
I guess so.
How do your parents, like, take in that part? That I am kind of curious about.
My dad refuses to get on social media just because of that. He won't get a Twitter, Instagram, anything.
He's smart
like,
plan.
I just wanted to see you as you. My mom has an issue not responding back to people. Like, she'll want to tweet people back. I think that they're used to it now, but they're not. They don't really like it. I think it's probably harder for my mom because she sees it because she's on there. Mm-hmm. My dad made a very conscious decision to not do that.
Well, I just imagine you're a former football player and daddy on the couch on prom night. Like, yeah, what's up, young fella?
Yeah.
Good to see you. And I look forward to seeing you right back here at 11:45.
Yep, with her in one piece.
Yeah. See, that's I hadn't really thought about it until right now. Like that right there, the being dad in the social media space, being Mr. Rooks is.
Yeah, and I'm so happy he's not on it because I just don't think that would go over well for me nor whoever's talking.
Or him.
Yeah.
Or him. Like, exactly. there's no win here for me other than him threatening lots of young men.
Yeah, exactly. Which is fun to watch.
oh, see, that's the problem with y'all. That's the problem with y'all, right? That got me thinking about my prom night where they set me up for this girl's daddy to harass me. And I was like, yo, can we go? I'm like, why are we still here?
Was it a good prom night?
It was a very good prom night.
Good.
Because I walked in with low expectations.
I feel that. Trust me, I feel that.
That's it. It was a good night in that regard. But they told me he was out of town. And then while I'm in the house, me and my boy had his day. You know, we come to pick her up. We're taking the pictures. And also my boy's like, yo, somebody pulled in the driveway behind you, dog. Next thing I know, Pops is coming in here.
Oh, yeah. Setup.
It was a setup.
Were you in Atlanta?
No, I was in Texas.
Oh, okay. Ooh, that might be worse.
I was shook. They're very nice people, though. They're very kind to me.
Good.
I was shook. In fact, I talked to her a couple weeks ago on the Instagram.
The Instagram.
That's right.
The Twitter, the Instagram, and the Facebook.
That's right. That's my favorite. That is my favorite oldism there.
You're not really a millennial. No.
No. In fact, the I could take it all the way over and call it the McDonald's. That's when you're fully in that space. Right. So this is Taylor Rooks. Check out Take It There with Taylor Rooks on the BR app.
Yep. YouTube.
Yes.
IGTV. Follow me at Taylor Rooks. All that good stuff.
And she likes you if you know who you are.
And you got some facial hair. Okay?
That's right. And I say she is not going for you on Trustworthy Dudes. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Kyrie Williams behind the scenes on this one, handling everything. Thank you, sir. Also, The Right Time will be doing a summer book club again. This year, we are doing Jim Brown, The Fierce Life of an American Hero, written by Mike Freeman. We're going to have three guests through the summer to talk about different chapters of the books and what they got from us. So be on the lookout for an official announcement on that coming soon. Thank you to Taylor Rooks, obviously. Also, thanks to our sponsor, Lightstream. And be sure to check out the Mina Kimes Show this week with ESPN football analyst Dan Orlovsky. They talk about the NFL and maybe some Bachelorette. Remember to subscribe to The Right Time and the Mina Kimes Show wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.